Welcome to episode 9.
I'm drinking scotch, by the way.
He's drinking scotch. It is now 11:12 in the morning. It's a celebratory inauguration day scotch, I would say.
Well, I just spoke to my friend Garrett in Germany to see about Friday, and he's giving a German lesson, actually, to an Italian and an Indian.
Going to bring him on the show?
I've got to talk to him later because I caught him right in the middle of a Stunde.
What's a Stunde?
That's a lesson.
Oh.
And anyway, I thought, well, you know, by gosh, it's 5 o'clock there.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's that's the scotch.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'm living in a German time zone.
Excellent. Right, excellent. I think
I did recently see a thing that said, why, you know, forget about this. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah,
it's 2020
exactly.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it was. It was exactly. Oh, yeah. I was
2020
talking,
everywhere. Yeah.
I was talking
2021, which, you know, has so far not been off to a better start.
Yeah, it has not.
Absolutely not.
Hopefully in 45 minutes, it begins to, the tide starts to shift.
Yeah, this is a timely show. We're not broadcasting. We're recording 45 minutes before the actual inauguration starts. So this,
Is it?
For,
okay, well, we
yeah.
gotta...
Yeah, mark the occasion.
Mark the occasion. I should put some scotch in.
We don't have any scotch.
Well,
you know, I could
we
get it going...
We drank that one in November.
I could get it going on my computer on the side and watch it and comment it on it live while we're doing this. But...
we did have a whiskey-based story relative to this, which is on election day of 2016. After voting, I went over and bought a bottle of whiskey that we were going to drink that night to celebrate the election. And when, you know, that shit happened, we just put the thing in the shelf and said, this stays here until this guy is voted out.
Nice.
And so it wasn't the election night this year, but at the Saturday when all the acceptance speeches, I guess the networks declared the victory and then they gave their acceptance speeches. Then we drank it that night. So we did.
Okay. We had it in the cabinet for 4 years. I mean, we're proud of that, to keep whiskey.
That's pretty good.
Like,
you're aging it. You're continuing to age it. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he won, I was just like, okay, can I just go to sleep and wake up 4 years later? Cause there's going to be a whole lot of BS. There's going to be a whole lot of BS. And we're all going to get, the whole thing's going to get wrapped. Is it kind of happened as I expected a little bit? I mean, not exactly, but I mean, it's actually a little worse than I expected.
Yeah.
I would say, especially culminating on January 6th. But let me back up first, because we haven't introduced you yet. Got to introduce you. So can you tell me who you are? You guys, you famous... You artists in New York City. Go.
I'm Joy Biddle, artist here in New York City. Also educator sometimes.
Educator?
I teach science.
Cool. Science.
An artist that teaches science to
awesome.
College students. So it's a one-on-one.
I didn't know that, Joy. Yeah, I'm learning.
A lot of people don't. They don't.
An artist who teaches science. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to do with, you know, I know some of your work has had a lot of the fossils and.
Yes.
Is it related to that?
Much, yeah.
That's related to that.
Like yeah, I teach two different courses for the School of Visual Arts, which is a 4-year college here in New York, which is both a design, tech, and then humanities college, and these students have to take a certain amount of both science and humanities. So I teach a humanities course in the fall, which is called the History of Nature and the Nature of History, which looks at timelines, and then also reading, writing, kind of pairing science literature, even science fiction literature, to actual study of earth science. And then I teach a basic geology course in the spring. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Nick, what about you?
I'm Nicholas Knight. I'm an artist and a photographer.
And a musician.
I was going to say, don't forget that one.
But I just can't sort of bundle that in with the artist thing.
That's true, I guess. So I asked you to be on today, you two. One, because I hadn't seen you in a long time, but and it's nice to catch up. But also, one of the things we're trying to do on this show is have more guests on, different opinions, different people, different walks of life all over the country, all over the world. And, you know, as Tom said, he's got some friends in Germany. They're calling in. I got a buddy in Philippines. Just trying to get perspectives on right now it's politics. You know, it's kind of at the forefront, our country and all the stuff that we've just gone through and where we're at and where we're going, I guess we would say. I'm just curious, like from a New York perspective, and you know, you also are artists too. So I think that's particularly unique. I'm also interested in, you know, you said you've been living there for 22 years, 22 years in New York City.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? How's that? I mean, did it go fast? Is it just like a blink of an eye? Like, and I lived in California for a long time, and I know it went really fast. It's just a fast pace, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to, I always kind of say with New York, it's kind of like ask me on the day how I feel about it. Because there's, on a day, every day it changes for me over the past when I look at things I've done here. Mm-hmm. And where we've kind of built conversations with artists that I know would never have happened anywhere else.
Yeah.
And for me in the past, and Nick too, actually for both of us in the past 5 to 10 years, we've been working with a lot of artists in Europe. I've been in Europe a lot this year, obviously not, everything's stalled, but it's kind of the first year I was here for at very consistent amount of time. So that's been interesting too, because I don't think we never would have met a lot of these connections in Europe without being in New York. So even though our home base is here, I think it's a place it's a place you can actually grow outside of too. It's a kind of easy stepping stones outside of, not that that was easy at the beginning. The beginning, we were in our 20s.
Yeah.
It was super hard.
Yeah. In a new place too. I think it always takes about anywhere from 5 to 10 years to get really ingrained in a community, wherever you move, anywhere, really, it takes a long time. Took me about 10 years in San Francisco to feel mm-hmm. that community kind of vibe, you know, having all these different types of friends. And, but yeah, so you're 22 years into it, but that's good. You think you'll stay? Just putting you on the spot here.
with everything.
Yeah.
In politics, I'm like happy. I'm a proud New Yorker. Yesterday, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, you guys. I guess the state of New York is going to be coming down on Trump a little bit. I think now that he's in about an hour, maybe they'll start throw some lawsuits at him in about an hour. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe 12:01. See, like the cops knocking on the door. That'd be great.
You know, for the last podcast to show you how I take a bullet for the team, I subjected myself to 5 days. 5 days. I didn't get my news at all from anything but the far right-wing networks like Fox, Newsmax, One America.
I've been doing that a little bit too.
You know, that's good. That's good because
I check in on it.
I need to be deplatformed. Trump was robbed.
Deprogrammed.
Oh, did I say that? Trump was robbed. Oh, my God. Yes. God help me.
It only took 5 days and he's been programmed.
Yeah. I mean, but
you learned so much.
Oh, I know. Well, you know what bothers me when I read this stuff? These are so-called sages of knowledge. Okay. And I'm hearing from like Tucker Carlson that all the violence that was perpetuated at the Capitol was due to Antifa.
Yeah.
It was Antifa activists that did that. And my thoughts were, okay, well, if these people were really dead set on patriotic, and I love these traitors call themselves patriots. That's what another thing I just love. If they were so dead set on having a quote as Trump put it, peaceful and patriotic demonstration. How could they be lured into violence? Or was it Antifa that actually carried out all the violence, and it was not any Trumpers?
Yeah, the Trumpers are not responsible for any of their actions.
Absolutely not, because just like their God, Donald Trump, he never accepts responsibility for anything.
Yeah.
You know,
he stated that pretty clearly.
And so I'm like, you know, I really took a bullet for the team there, John. Yeah.
Well, I, as I said, I'm on Twitter a lot. So I have an account called the John and Tom Show. that's the name of my account. And I subscribe to everything. So I have all across the board. Like you said, Nick, you can't just, it was amazing that you were able to do that for 5 days. I can't do it. I got to have a little bit of everything. Like there's, you know, but I do Newsmax, OAN, all those guys, you know, Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan. And I see them, these patterns of them, what they're posting, and they're still continuing this rhetoric. And, you know, Matt Gaetz, that day of the next day or of the riot, or the storming of the Capitol, he did exactly say that. And he said it was Antifa on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
He said it. There's proof that it was Antifa that did this. But they're also, the Trump people are also claiming responsibility for it because it's so patriotic what they did. So there's oh wait, did Antifa do it? Or are you guys trying to be patriots? And it's very, like, it's whatever's convenient.
It's an entitled way of thinking that goes beyond, I guess I wonder, like being in Indiana, growing up there, obviously knowing the landscape, and, you know, Jamie and Jason are still there. My parents are still there. They've never left. Like, do you guys find, I mean, it's really not around us, this Fox News, you know, like it's really easy to get away from here.
It's a bubble over there.
Now, Queens has its thing. I mean, believe me, there's definitely.
Which deep or shallow? Is it deep or shallow? Queens. That has that.
Yeah, deep.
Deep. Okay. Both.
But we're in a pretty industrial area there, you know. But again, in New York, it's just such I know that it's easier to get away from. Here in Indiana, I think maybe I would be apt to probably have to look at some of that news to understand it better. But I do think that that's easier for us.
I think originally we wanted this podcast was about common ground. My original goal of this was to bring on people on the opposite sides of the spectrum to talk about and listen. Really listen to each other, even if it's difficult. Find some common ground and start there, and then see if you can go. January 6th made me cancel that idea. I was like, I can't do it anymore. Right now, right now is not the time for that. Maybe later. Maybe we can go back to it. But right now, I can't do that. I'm not even going to try because it's not realistic. It's not genuine.
I've heard multiple times, and I completely agree. If you don't have shared facts, then you can't come together and talk about it.
Everybody
who doesn't really, it's really an alternate reality.
It is. Yeah. It is a type of, I mean, look, Tom got programmed in 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm still, you know, I have nightmares about Biden, you know, taking over.
And also sleepy. Did we mention sleepy?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, you know, you've got it.
Thank God he's sleepy.
Oh, yeah, actually,
sleepy. There's no irony in that for me.
Seems like a positive to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I told John before, this is the Mecca of Republicanism. Because for one thing, you have to remember, what was the very first state to be declared on election night? It was Hoosierland.
Indiana.
It was Hoosierland. And who are we called for? None other than Donnie Trump. So, see, John and I have to work kind of underground here. You know, good question.
To do this podcast,
I mean, I've lived here forever. Why the hell did you come back here?
We grew up together.
My goal is to have a subversive podcast. That's it. Now, you know why I moved. And you know,
I'm getting this curtain drawn though, right? You can't let anybody see what's going on in there.
What's that? Oh, curtains. Yeah. I open them occasionally, but you know, when we're on the air, I got to keep it.
Well,
tight.
There could be snipers out there. You know, we've got to be careful.
Tom's on the list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm a traitor. I am non-patriotic.
Yes. It's really not that bad here.
Go back to the Antifa thing for a second. I read an article in the Washington Post, and it was about the son of a police chief in a small Virginia town who had been at the Capitol and had posted pictures of himself because the brilliant foresight of all these morons doing selfies. And so then there was this controversy in the town where people went to the police chief and said, so here's all this evidence. What are you going to do about it? And the reporter was interviewing people in the town and found this Trump supporter who was completely convinced by the Antifa thing. Obviously it's only Antifa. And then shown these selfies by this guy, by the kid. And there, as part of the interview, she just had this cognitive dissonance meltdown where she just couldn't, her whole reality just splintered.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of those people that made those videos. Not just the crazy bearded guys with the Camp Auschwitz shirts on. There's people out there, the preppy looking people, lawyers, doctors, mayoral candidates,
Olympic swimmers that made
videos saying, and then before and after, it's like, we just stormed the Capitol and it felt great. You know, it's like, and
you see how they accomplished something.
Speaking of the Camp Auschwitz.
They did accomplish something. That's the sad part.
But not what they thought.
Yeah, but they didn't know.
I love the sense of all these guys in the Senate chamber being like, okay, now what? All right, well, I guess we leave now?
Well, the funny thing is, how many of those House Republicans still voted that the election was fraud after the storming of the Capitol?
Yeah, this is the sad part, actually, is how it was handled. Yeah. And allowance of it is the part that I think will be obviously something we should be considering further, because clearly it's...
Well, we got T-minus...
I wasn't surprised that these freaks were doing that. We were watching them,
It's the compliance of the lack of security, and it's compliance of some of the police officers.
Yeah.
And, T-minus 30 minutes till the inauguration, and I still have this deep-seated fear that the military and all those 20,000 troops in Washington, D.C. are going to turn. It's like a movie where they turn their guns around and they arrest Biden, I have
there
this deep-seated fear.
There were groups of Proud Boys.
Oh, yeah.
There were Proud Boys around the Trump Tower a couple of days ago. Yeah. So around the Trump Tower for 4 years on Fifth Avenue, they've always had barricades, and there's kind of been constant protests.
It's like the Eye of Sauron or something.
Yeah, totally. But the Proud Boys showed up two or three days after. It was that weekend after, and I was down there, and I was talking to a friend of mine who works around there, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, it was this reversal of action all of a sudden. Yeah. What are you going to do here in the middle of Manhattan during the pandemic, where everything's pretty much boarded up in that area? And there were just kind of a couple of them just marching down the street. But it meant that all of the enforcements had to go out. Yeah. This is a big, there is a disruption to it, is my point. They do something. They do.
We have been doing shows on militias, understanding militias and these extremist groups. And it is pretty interesting just how they have proliferated and grown recently in the last 4 years quite a bit. We had Tom's son-in-law, who's a U.S. National Guard, on, and he was kind of giving us some of the history. And he said they're a credible threat. The Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. And Oath Keepers are kind of scary because they're a national group.
So are the 3%ers.
And the 3%ers. And, the 3%ers, those cops that they were out guarding in D.C., when they're policemen in fatigues, actual policemen, and they have a 3%ers patch on their police uniform. Guy after guy after guy. That's why I'm thinking, are we looking for something crazy about to happen here? But
well, you
certainly
know,
hope not.
Jake and I had as far as the total number of militia groups, just militia groups in the U.S. In our research, John and I came up with 165. My son-in-law came up with over 250. And I can believe his, because Toomey Senator Toomey from Pennsylvania said that there are 25 militia groups, known militia groups in Pennsylvania alone.
And the funny thing is they're completely illegal. Armed paramilitary activity
25
is completely illegal in every state in this country. So how are they allowed to, how are they being allowed to exist and grow and put out stuff on social media without any repercussions? It's insane. It's insane.
Insane to show up at the Capitol with zip ties and intentions.
Well, they are. I did. It does seem like they've cracked down on a lot of those people. They've arrested like almost 200, I think, people that were there. It's not a lot. There was there was thousands of people there. Some of those videos are like, I couldn't believe how many people were there. And it's just a crazy mix of people. I mean,
well, that's the thing that strikes me about it. This crazy mix of clown show and people who are genuinely scary and people who are just so dumb. They like, you almost think they have actual deniability of realizing they were doing anything wrong just because they're so stupid.
This is the difficult part. There are people that I know who are very smart people that support him based on policies, his policies, and they overlook everything else. They overlook everything else because the policies, and the question I always ask them is, are his policies worth destroying our democracy? Are those policies that you love so much, is that worth giving up everything we've built as a country in a democracy? And you know, it really is that case. I mean, if you look at Trump and sort of all of his patterns, and it's a road to fascism. I mean, he's following a playbook to get to. He's not fascist yet, but his actions are leading there.
It's only due to his incompetence is the only reason he's not there yet.
And time. It took fascist leaders. It takes them a long time to get there.
Yeah, and the media playing this role in these particular areas these people are only accessing it, and they know how to do it. You know, they know how to get at the policy that person thinks about every day, and is about them. It's all about them. So that one policy, right, is the thing that will govern. And I think that was out orchestrated extremely well for 4 years.
Yeah,
I think the further thing about the policy too is none of them are his beliefs.
Some of them might be
generic Republican policies. Any Republican politician would have pursued the same policies.
Yeah, I think he.
No, it's a total. It doesn't hold water. The thing that really accounts for the cult of personality is the racism and the sexism and the all of that. That's the thing that differentiates.
He just
him.
Wants praise too. That's his biggest thing. If you praise him, this is like a fascist leader. You have to praise the leader. You know, that's basically what it is.
So, governing out of spite, the winning.
If you praise him, you get a place. You missed Mr. Pillow guy praised him. Oh, look where he got. You know,
talk about no brains. Oh my God,
it's incredible. Anybody, if you kiss his ass enough, he'll give you a position in government. He'll make you an advisor.
Speaking of dictatorships, I'm really anxious. We haven't had a chance yet, but I'm really anxious to talk to our friends in Germany about their spin on these idiots wearing the Camp Auschwitz shirts. And the one guy that was wearing the 6 million was not enough and all that. I would love to get that from their side. And I'm along those lines. I wonder, have you two heard Arnold Schwarzenegger's video, My Message to My Fellow Americans? That
I
really
saw
hit home.
You should check it out. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, he talks about it from the other side of the pond. You know, he was born 2 years after the end of World War II and lived through the aftermath of all that. And I think anybody with any brains that sees that would be moved by it. But of course, there are right wingers who think he's an ultimate traitor living here in the U.S. and talking about this, you know.
He's a Republican, too.
Yeah, he's a Republican. Oh, absolutely.
He was the governor for 8 years.
California Republican.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, that's really weird to begin with.
I don't know if he was always a Republican.
This is true.
That kind of speech, that kind of stuff is illegal in Germany.
Still?
I'm pretty sure.
I think it's gaining. I think it's gaining popularity a little bit, and it seems like around the whole world.
No doubt, but I'm pretty sure that kind of like expression of sympathy for the Holocaust and Nazis is actually against the law.
I think it has been. I don't know if it is anymore. Causes,
you know, Americans aren't used to that because, you know.
There is, in fact, an actual holiday for it. When I was in Leipzig, I did a project there a couple years ago, and I actually fell over the day that they, and I don't know what it's called, but they celebrate this divide. And, of course, I'm in an art museum, very, very liberal people, and around this as an artist. And I remember the conversation being, it being a new active, and this is Leipzig, so East Germany, but it was a new activity kind of to actually go on this holiday and disrupt it. And people on the left there were afraid that this extremist was going to rise. And there was quite a lot of this. I'm doing my project. I wasn't really involved, but it's in the fall. And it, it took place in both Leipzig and in all these different cities. And there was a lot of conversation about fear free of speech being an issue again. Well, so I think it's true, but it's changing. I mean, you know, like everywhere.
Well, that's just the freedom of speech thing. It's like, yes, we have the First Amendment here, but there is a line, right? There, when you start talking about inciting violence or racism, extreme racism and extreme views that are damaging, I don't know the First Amendment. Does it say that? You guys know it very well, but
no.
Does it call out a line, or is it everything is okay?
I think it's really very vague, John. I don't see any restrictions in there where this says that you cannot speak out against the government or perpetuate extremist ideals. I don't know. It's to me, it's very vague.
I think that there's been court rulings over the years that have sort of laid out where some limits are, like yelling fire in a crowded theater, that sort of thing. I think there are specific rulings that have tried to, you know, articulate it more, but the amendment itself is quite open.
Yeah. I mean, people are spouting hate all the time everywhere now.
Well,
where's there, you know, there, but it does seem like there should be a point where, you know, yeah, I don't want to go to censorship. I mean, that's kind of what's going on right now, too. There seems to be some amount of censorship, which I never like. But, you know, if it results in somebody storming the Capitol based on lies, the reason they stormed it was based on a lie that the election was stolen. The president of the United States was purveying the lie. So it has a lot of power. So that is very, I mean, when the president of the United States is the main liar, and that's a tough situation, and Twitter had to make a tough decision there.
So, you know, Twitter isn't censoring them in the sense that the First Amendment is talking about. They're a private company. They can do what they want.
Yes. It's rules and regulations that he broke. And that's, I agree. But I think people do look at it. Some people look at it as a form of censorship. I agree with you. I think it is a private company, and I think it is, you know, companies can have their rules and regulations. It's just become so big, and the main way of it has become a platform that's the way, the chosen communication for the president of the United States. That's new.
It's where people get their news, and this is, I guess, a bigger universal problem of social media, right? Like this is starting to replace, you know, news channels or
newspapers.
Maybe not replace them, but add to them. And then it's so hard to go on Facebook and scroll through, and the algorithms now are pinning people into different sides. We know, we all know all this. That's what's, maybe some people don't.
Have you seen Social Dilemma?
Yeah.
Even the guys that work at those places can't resist.
Admit it.
They even know. They did the code for the software, and they've created the AI, and the AI is out of control. You know,
and it's blatant. They're blatantly saying we were never asked to create any limitations. It was all corporate gain, benefit, commercial money making endeavor. Yeah. And they admit this, and I think it's Social Dilemma's. I think it's really good. I think what are you? I mean, we all, and I know so many people have watched it, but we all keep on these platforms. We all kind of,
there's no answers. That's the scary part of that that documentary. No one has answers. No one.
And
has
the evolutionary biology could be the more interesting.
Kids are our brains growing up with it, and they're going to be little computers. But
you know, I was in Germany about one of the times when I was in Germany about 15 years ago. I never will forget this. We have friends there that we stay with, and then I have some family in northern Germany, but we always go with our friends in southwestern Germany. And I never will forget this. One day we were sitting at the breakfast table, and Edith, Oma, she's 87 now, but she saw a thing in the newspaper where this neo-Nazi Haider had won an election in Austria, and she just about flipped.
Yeah.
She about had a meltdown, and she starts off, and my wife didn't speak German, but I said, geez, I'm afraid Edith's going to have a heart attack here, because she kept saying, these fucking kids have no idea what they're talking about. They have no perception at all of what this is. And that's why I would love to talk to Edith about what's going on in the U.S., but I'm afraid she'd have a heart attack if I did.
Yeah.
You know, because she was a teenager. She grew up as a teenager during World War II, and she knows what living under those conditions is like.
Yeah.
All right. I have a complimentary story to that. I was in Germany outside of Frankfurt last year at Christmas. I was at a Christmas party in a fairly well-to-do suburb outside Frankfurt. And 80-something-year-old mother of one of my friend's friends. She was a pleasant woman. We were having a conversation. Towards the end of the evening, she sort of draws me in close and she says, my most prized possession, I have a copy of Mein Kampf.
Wow.
And then she proceeded to tell me the story of how this nephew of hers had smuggled it into the country because it's banned. Mm. And I was dumbfounded. I had no idea.
What do you say when somebody says that to you?
How to react. Right. Jeez. And then, so I just sort of backed away slowly from the conversation.
You're like,
yeah. Well, so then a day later, I told my friend who I was staying with.
Who's French?
Well, the one who's German.
Well, Nina, yeah.
I told her, and she said, this neighborhood that we're in, this was where all the Nazi Party leadership lived during World War II. They all bought houses here. And so this direct legacy is still intact.
Yeah.
And it was chilling. It was just freaky.
Yeah.
I hadn't had that kind of anything like that. And it really
and there was something on NPR I was listening to the other day about the women of.
Yeah, we heard that. The concentration camp.
Yeah, they were running the concentration camps, but almost no women were ever prosecuted.
Right.
They claimed that they were innocent because if they didn't do it, that they would have gone into the concentration camp themselves. But then they've interviewed some of the ladies in their 80s who are still alive that were saying, oh, I would do it again today. You know, that they still believe that. You know, that's still alive and well in some people. They believed in it at the time. They still, all after all these years, feel. And it's kind of, it's powerful how, the mind control and how Hitler's mind control, how that whole thing was built, that fascist regime. I try not to compare Trump to Hitler, but sometimes it's hard because there are some similarities, early on in Hitler, when Hitler was just getting started, with trying to get power, the similarities of, it made it a little bit different because Trump became president right away. And it took about 10 years for Hitler to become, to get into power, but they, some of the tactics that are used and the mind and just sort of the brainwashing effect, this cult-like this cult-like effect that, you know, they interview people, the supporters, and it's like, doesn't matter what he says, doesn't matter what he does, I'll always support him. I think he's the second coming of Jesus. I think that, like, he's done something.
And Biden is the Antichrist.
And Biden is the Antichrist, and he's a pedophile, too.
Yeah.
But I think that point, pedophile. This makes me think all of, like, what you're saying, because I listened to that same interview with the female guards, and I instantly thought and connected a lot of people I know in my life here, older, that are just involved in belief system. Just that's it. That's what they're going to go on. And so it makes me think, like, and of course, through kind of looking at the work I do and things like this, this idea of belief system for me has become a big conversation and question mark. And that kind of, is it good? Like, how do we deal with this, you know, sense of belief?
You're saying belief system,
your beliefs in science can be too much, your beliefs in certain things. And so I've often thought, like, that's really the trigger in the human condition is our, and it shows right now, people are so lost on many levels that belief systems, no matter what it is probably where they're going to find security. And I would only imagine, I mean, through looking at like this woman and this older generation in Germany, let's go back to belief system. I think it's happening here. Baby boomer belief system is there. It's ingrained, and I don't know. I've just been thinking about that a lot. And things.
You know, I'm a baby boomer, and actually, I'm pretty much an old hippie. In fact, no. I got to get a haircut today because my wife says you're starting to look like an old hippie. And I said, well, hell, I am an old hippie. You know, what do you expect? But anyway, it's
stuck in Indiana.
It's crazy that the number of my, and you're right, the number of my generation that actually buy into this crap. But there are the millennials and the Generation Xers who believe in all this.
Indeed, belief is a vast.
Right, and a perfect example is Lauren Boebert.
Oh boy.
And Marjorie Greene. Now, these are both congresswomen, and these are QAnoners, and they make no bones about it. They are QAnoners.
That Boebert tried to bring a assault rifle into Congress.
Yes, yes. And
right.
Green is going to bring articles of impeachment against Biden tomorrow, supposedly in the House of Representatives. But, and they're both women, you know, and I'm like, and no, you know, no insult intended. But they're both QAnoners. And here's my question. I wonder, when they were running for office, did the electorate that voted them into office know that they were devotees of QAnon? And if the case, that scares me even more.
Yeah.
That people actually elected these two maniacs to Congress if they knew that they were into this QAnon crap. That's the scary part.
But it's a religion to them, and we elect religious leaders. Look at Pence all the time. Belief of that system is it's what I think it's still hard to define with this country because it's.
Well, I think religion is especially Christianity has been here since the beginning, so it's rooted.
Yeah,
it's rooted in this country. The thing that's weird about QAnon is this is a new somebody dreamt up some conspiracy theories, put them all together, and that's your platform, conspiracy theories. And you know everyone that doesn't support Trump is a pedophile. You know,
satanic pedophile.
And it's like how did that happen so quickly? It's social media. Back to social media. I think that's part of it. And is that algorithm great. That keeps feeding you what you already know and reinforcing what you already believe and then giving you a few extra tidbits to go off the deep end. And
there was a great piece on there's a program on public radio called On the Media, and they did a piece this past weekend that was an interview with a game designer who's involved in this particular kind of game. I forget what they called it. It's not augmented reality, but it's something like that. I'm not in the gaming world, so I don't know these things that well, but mm-hmm. he said that when he started to hear about QAnon, he instantly recognized it as being exactly what he does for a living, only his games are, you know, meant for fun and profit. But mm-hmm. it's this idea that you give somebody a clue and they go out and they're enticed to try to find it and they feel involved. And if all of this stuff was really real that QAnon is doing, you would just come out and say it. But instead, he drops these cryptic clues and keeps people on the hook. And this guy was so like, he said, this is precisely what we do as designers of these games. That's what QAnon is. It's one of these games, only mm-hmm. with deadly real world consequences.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of brings me to, like, you know, politicians in general and how they, you know, what they say. And a lot of it's just so they can retain power, retain their job, and whether they believe it or not or whether it's good for the country or not. And they start going down a direction and they have to stay on that path. Once you've chosen to be with Trump, you have to stay on that path and you're in, because it's hard to go back. Once you've been with Trump, I always say all the people that joined Trump, your life is over. I mean, in the real world, if you worked for him, it's very hard to get off that train.
Well, Mike Pence he's between a rock and a hard place. Now, if by having done nothing, by not having invoked the 25th Amendment like he should have, he is going to forever be tied to Trump's coattails. Okay, so that's killing politically. But really, I think it would have been to his advantage politically, his personal advantage, to have invoked the 25th Amendment, because a lot of people would say, gosh, this guy actually has some guts.
Well, you saw how fast the rioters turned on him, right? They said, hang Pence.
Yeah,
it's
like these idiots were, like this one idiot, they were breaking into the Senate chambers, and this one imbecile's going, where the fuck's Nancy? And I'm thinking, dude, you're in the wrong place. Nancy is a representative. She's not a senator.
Right.
That's some deep state shit, Tom.
Yeah. That's
how do you know that, Tom?
Where'd you get that?
Well, I saw that on one of the videos. On one of the videos, they were breaking into the gallery of the Senate, and this one asshole sitting there going, where the fuck's Nancy? Hang Pence. Where the fuck's Nancy?
Yeah. You know? I mean, there's videos of them screaming, hang, you know, let's hang Pence, you know, let's take this gun from this police officer who was there. Kill him with his own gun.
Yeah. Like, well, those audio tapes really? Are terrible.
Yeah. Over and over and over, you can see all these things. And there's so many videos out there. And then, you know, I went to the Alex Jones website because we were in this, like, let's research.
Hey, I'm a big Alex fan.
Let's research some right-wing conspiracies, like, and really get in there and see what they're up to. And Alex Jones, first thing you see on his page is a giant ad for some mug that says Alex Jones on it. First thing, like, it just pops and takes up the whole page. But then you get all these videos, and there's just, like, it's so crazy, but people buy it, you know, and that's
I think it's just lazy too. I mean, there's such a laziness to like what we saw on January 6th, and they kind of get riled up, you know, in the moment. Yeah, and there's some planning that these guys do with their backpacks and their military gear and theater and this, but then once they get in,
what were you gonna do?
Lazy. And I think that just shows kind of, you know, obviously this is something that they just, you know, it was like when they woke up today and going to try to do this. And
it was
it's scary, but
it was a strange combination of different actions going on. There were some people strolling between the ropes, taking pictures of the statues, and other people were beating people with flags and taking the Trump flag and replacing it, you know, on the outside and throwing the American flag down. And then you had people just strolling around. And
these are patriots.
This is such a weird event.
These are patriots.
Yeah. Well, I heard people were seen in, like, diners later that night by, like, local, like, just having coffee after the day.
Really work up an appetite.
Yeah.
How was your storm?
Yeah.
How'd the storm go for you?
You know, John, John has become an Alex Jones fan. I have become a Tucker Carlson fan.
Oh, great.
Okay, and if you're not familiar with Tucker Carlson, he is one of the commentators on Fox News. And according to Tucker Carlson, now this is coming straight from one of his broadcasts that I actually put myself through to watch, but this blew me away. Did you know that QAnon Shaman, remember the guy with the horns and the furs and the painted face and all that? Well, according to Tucker Carlson, he is actually undercover Antifa.
Mm.
He was sent there undercover to agitate the crowd, but he was just one of many.
Well, he does only eat organic food.
Well, yeah, he's having a hard time in jail because they won't give him organic food.
He gets sick if he doesn't eat organic food.
Yeah,
lives at home with his mom too.
Yeah, how old is he? He lives at home with his parents, man. I love
this. Nothing against that. Not trying to say that's bad. just throwing it out there.
But no, he's undercover Antifa.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure.
I saw that too. That was a good one. I'm gonna get his look. I'm gonna go buy his look.
I thought undercover was supposed to be anonymous looking too. I'm not sure this guy gets the undercover concept.
Interesting choice. Yeah. Interesting choice there.
yeah, he should have been a little more subtle, I guess, you know.
All right, T minus 2 minutes to what happens at 12? Is it like big bell rings and confetti flies out of the Capitol or something?
Just don't open your curtains.
Yeah, I'm going to stay.
Actually, yeah. Do you have a live feed?
Live updates. Here's YouTube. I don't know. It might override our call or something.
Oh, we missed it.
What? It's done?
Well,
I thought it started at 12.
The New York Times headline. New York Times.
Well.
Oh, he's right now speaking.
Okay,
so
good. Yeah, I'm too nervous to watch it anyway. So I don't know. If you guys want to watch it, you can.
We watch the highlights. Okay. We don't watch, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me the Sports Center version.
Yeah, Trump didn't come. All those things they did at the end there, like first time for everything. It's like first time the president.
But what a manly man.
What a manly
so
man.
So manly to, you know, not go because it's not cowardly at all. One thing we want to make sure we point out is that it's not a coward's action.
Yeah, you know, he really cares about the people and all those people that supported him on, you know.
Well, you talk about
January 6th. He was really there for him.
Yeah. He did say he loved him. And then he backtracked.
Talk about a brave macho guy. Remember at the big rally.
He loves Macho Man, the song.
Yeah.
He loves that.
YMCA. Yeah.
Which are very, very straight songs. We should point out that there's that the guys in Village People really enjoyed having intercourse with females.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
very important.
Just like Trump.
Important point.
So it's important to note that.
Well, you know,
man, by the way,
Trump is such a man. Remember, I watched the rally. I've taken a lot of bullets here, John, a lot of bullets. I watched the entire rally prior to the storming of the Capitol, and Trump promised the crowd, I'll be there with you. I'm going to march there with you. And in fact, during the march, these idiots in the back of the crowd were heard saying, oh, he's up front. Where's Trump? Oh, he's up front. He's leading us. Well, he booked for the White House. He no more went to the Capitol than I did.
All right, he's talking. Let's see if
this is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward. And we must meet this moment as the United States of America. If we do that, I guarantee you we will not fail. We have never, ever, ever, ever failed in America. We've acted together. And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Politics doesn't have to be a raging fire, destroying everything in its path. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured.
So this is live. We got it live. pretty cool. I can do this. I didn't think it was going to actually come through.
We have to be different than this. America has to be better than this. And I believe America is so much better than this. Just look around. Here we stand in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, as was mentioned earlier, completed amid the Civil War, when the Union itself was literally hanging in the balance. Yet we endured. We prevailed. Here we stand.
All right.
Looking out on the Great Mall, where Dr. King spoke of his dream. Here we stand, where 108 years ago, at another inaugural, thousands of protesters tried to block brave women marching for the right.
It's what, you know, it's what I would expect.
Tell me things can't change.
Oh, is that you? Is that you, Nick?
Here we stand.
I think so.
Oh, that's you.
What?
Somebody's still playing it.
Who gave the last full measure of devotion.
Whoever's playing it.
Rest in eternal peace.
Me?
No. And here we stand.
Oh, it is me.
It is you.
Sorry about that. Joe can't be stopped. He wanted us to hear it.
I had the volume turned all the way
down. No, it was me. It was me.
And actually, I turned off my cell phone, John.
Good job. Good job.
Thank you.
Well, I just think that is, kind of like, sort of a, that's what presidents are supposed to do, right? Like just have a boring speech. You want a boring speech. I don't want it to be sensational. I don't want it to be, that's what politics is, in my mind, supposed to be boring.
Politics as usual.
Yeah. It's a politician. Boring. They're just taking care of government stuff. It's not like, it's not a reality TV show. It's like, it's not trying to get ratings. I don't care. Yeah, he's boring.
It's not a cult.
It's not a cult. I want it to be boring. I hope people just forget about politics and go back to doing other stuff now. Whatever that is. Maybe they're just bored. That's why they were like loving Trump so much. He's like, oh, gave me something to do.
Well, I keep thinking that on both the left and the right, that, we're probably going to see a lot of people not letting certain things go, obviously. And I don't know.
Well, they're talking Patriot Party is his new third party. They already got a name for it, a Patriot Party. And they're already starting. I think they're going to start. It's not official, but that's the big rumor. And I've been calling that for a while, that he's going to start a third party.
You mean patriotic, like the woman that stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop and was going to turn it over to the Russians? You mean that kind of patriot?
Their definition of patriot is unique. It's different.
Oh, okay.
So, whatever the term patriot is now, but I think they're going to do that. So that to me will probably just destroy the Republican Party, and it will make it easier for Democrats to retain power if that's the case, because it's going to split half the votes, maybe not half. There'll probably be more Patriot Party votes than Republican votes, because there's fewer and far between. Like if you're not a full blown Trump supporter, first of all, you're a pedophile. Second of all,
you're weak.
And not patriotic.
So they would put Republicans who are conservative but not insane in a difficult spot. Like how are you going to continue to support your party, or are you going to vote for Biden? And I started following the Republicans for Biden on Twitter, because I felt like those people were being honest a little bit.
Yeah.
They're being kind of honest. And I started listening to a lot of those guys. Because I wanted to, it's hard to tell who's telling the truth. Sometimes on both sides, even, because politicians are politicians, and everybody's.
In a way, I found it on this to in a little bit. Of course, there's a lot of complexities, but I found it a bit easy with the Republicans. If you voted for him twice, after everything that happened, the first time around, it's like, Republican, support the party, blah blah blah. Didn't like it, but I didn't. I thought you would do it. To do it again,
he got 5 million more votes.
I really had a hard time accepting them voting just for policy in the Republican Party.
That's probably one of my biggest issues too. Is that people that know better, that they don't see the bigger picture. They're focusing on the policies, and it's just to me. It's just not worth it. Just not that those policies. And I also said that maybe there's a compromise we can make. And I think this should be considered. Some of the policies I kind of think there are may be good for us, like being tougher on China, trying to bring some of our manufacturing home. And I know some people will say that's irrelevant because of technology and things, but there is a lot of people in this country that could use manufacturing jobs, or could, you know, being tougher on China, I think is okay. I mean, I think some of the other things that, and maybe there's some compromises that we can say we'll take some of these and we'll kind of implement them. We'll keep them going. If you really are that concerned about policy, some of the policies might work.
Yeah, historically, you can look at the unions, even in New York here. This is a very good argument for the historic policy of the Republican Party and this kind of protection of law and workforce. But that's just not where the game we're in right now at all. And it hasn't been for a while. And that's the part that I find, like, second time around.
The healing thing that they talk about is not possible if they're not doing anything for it. Like, I'm willing as voting on for Biden, and after that 4 years, I still want to try to bridge a gap, even though it's awful. I mean, the thing is, the spell has to wear off first, though. That cult spell has to wear off, because if that's still present, nothing's going to happen.
I agree with that.
I saw a disturbing statistic just, I think, yesterday. They did a poll amongst Republicans, and fully 73% of Republicans are unmoved by Trump's actions. They are just as ardent supporters today as ever, in spite of all the crap that he pulled.
So that's about 25% loss. So what's 25% of 75? I don't know. It's hard to do that math, but maybe that's down to 60 million or something. So,
but still, it bothers me that many Republicans see this crap and don't think anything's wrong with it.
But
Tom, like, your little sojourn through the looking glass this 5 days of doing right wing media, you know, if for the people who are full time in that, they don't even hear about the things.
That's the reality, 100%.
Yeah, they don't know that these things have happened. All the news they've gotten, it really was the left that pretended to storm the Capitol. So why would you be pissed at Trump? Because it was the left.
Yeah.
They haven't seen anything that tells them differently. And it's like that across the board for years. And that's the thing that drives me crazy about it. Like,
Well, the irresponsibility.
You know, because I keep thinking of it like this. If you really believe, truly, without a doubt, that the election was stolen, then in a certain sense, you do need to participate in a revolution.
Right.
Like, our democracy, they're not the ones destroying democracy. Democracy's already been destroyed. The patriots that founded this country rose up against the oppressors, and we're doing the same. We're
following the Constitution.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes, and it's a good point.
They really, if you really believe it, that is your duty. But the problem is the believing of it and the media sources. Like you said from the beginning, the believing, but the media also creates this thing.
Well, also the distrust that was sowed early on and throughout the entire time for Trump of saying the media is the enemy of the people. And just repeating that over and over and over. And they automatically think that the media is the enemy of the people, which is, I saw something with Obama the other day about at the very end of his term, addressing the media after 8 years being there. And he was like, you know, you guys, we've been through a lot, and I appreciate you asking the tough questions. That's what your job is. You know, just keep doing that. Ask those tough questions. That's what a man does, right? He doesn't whine about a tough question and call them names and try to call them little elementary school, like playground bully names. You know, it's just unbelievable that we had to endure that crap for so long. But the result of it is what you're talking about, though. It's this distrust of the media, and they're going to alternative outlets that are basically 100% lies.
Yeah.
And they're completely making these stories up to control their minds and to make them do stuff like January 6th, you know, and it's really scary that it happened here. It actually happened here. It's mind blowing.
Well, you know, I don't understand Here's one point that I made with, I told you I've got a friend that's a true Trumper, and I think he's just a baby step away from being an extremist. And he had no answer for me. I said, well, I keep hearing about the left media doing this and that and the other. Why don't you listen to the right media? There's right media. You've got Fox. You've got One America. You've got Newsmax. So how is it that it's the left media that's causing all this, and the right media has no say in it whatsoever?
Right.
Yeah, they say the media. Like the media. The blanket of the media is
the
all
media. Well, the media,
the enemy, but
the media
half of it is
right
wing
and left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think the goal of them is to be a contrarian no matter what, and then, right, use those tactics back. And it's like, you know, fighting with the mirror in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, any lighter topics that we could discuss? I always get depressed because we talk about these, and I go through this like this like hour of talking about reality, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, but right now,
lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, and unfortunately, John, this is what's on everybody's mind right now. I mean, I am really happy that nothing has gone
well. Don't awry. Where's the whip?
Yeah, I know the day ain't over yet. That's for sure. But so far, so good. Because one of the QAnon dogmas is that today was the day that the great revolution would begin. Today was the day that Trump was going to mobilize the military and take over the government. I read that just yesterday.
Yeah, it's not over yet. I mean, the amount of those potential people in military and police, it's scary. You know,
thanks for bringing it down again. I we're always being in New York, bro. It's you can just be here and hear it. You can hear when things happen, sirens, helicopters.
Oh,
which is
pretty
constant, right?
Yeah, we're right across from the UN building, so it's kind of fascinating. Nice. We look at it, and you feel it in the air when these things happen across the world.
I do miss living in San Francisco. That was a lot of fun, and the city, the vibe, the energy in the air. It's pretty special. But I'm an old man now, two kids living
it's
in the burbs.
Too, John. Yeah, enjoying her, because I'm like, I'd give anything to not be in it right now.
You're welcome to move to Carmel. It's becoming more, because we're here, it's becoming more open-minded. And
well, you know, I was surprised when you told me during the election, pre-election time, that there were a lot of Biden signs up.
Yeah,
there.
In my neighborhood. I moved here. We moved here in October, and every sign on our block was Biden and American flags, which is great. I love that they had a proud American flag and a Biden sign, because a lot of times it's, you know, I've said this before, the American flags got hijacked to mean Trump, and it's just blasphemy in my opinion. You know, hanging out of these giant trucks, looking like Al Qaeda driving down the street with their big flags, Trump and the American flag. And it's like, it's just so wrong. So I'm always happy when people fly, because I still like the flag. I still very proud of the flag in America and the American ideals, what America means, you know, that's what it's about for me. We've gone awry in some ways, but hey, you know, it doesn't mean you give up. Doesn't mean you fight for those ideals, and the flag represents that. And so it's always nice when I see Biden with a flag too. It's like, it's just not. But our street,
I think it'll come back in that way. That'll come back, I think. Now I think it will. I think that kind of stuff will.
I hope so. I hope that the spell works.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it kind of has no choice. Right?
And Kamala is American. It's a great American story. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
I'm very excited and happy that she's there too.
Yeah, I think she's really competent and a great choice for vice. And I don't know. I mean, Biden is pretty old, and he's listening to that speech. He was slurring a little bit, and it's. I think everybody knows he might not last very long in there. He might last a year or two, and she'll probably take over. That's my prediction. You heard it here first.
Yeah, but the thing is, I would be comfortable with that.
Yeah, exactly.
If it came to that, I would be very comfortable with that.
What's that?
I'm with you, Tom. I said, we just needed Joe to get in to 15 yeah. minutes.
Yeah,
ago
there you
to
go.
Get the orange guy, get the orange Cheeto yeah. out of here.
Because if he had somehow gone down before the inauguration, it would have been like a shit show.
But oh my God.
He elected the guy. Now he's president. Now, whatever. If he wants to retire right now, yeah. that's fine.
We still have
that's what I said too.
Problem. It could happen.
At the end of his speech, he's like, BTW, I'm out. Drop the mic. Here you go, Kamala. I'd be okay with that. That's fine. I don't, you know.
The earth is not flat.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. Well, to maybe some QAnoners, it is.
You know, you just start hiring people that are competent in the government and fill some government positions that are competent instead of like what Trump did. It seemed like he was purposefully hiring people that were going to sabotage the government, right? Rick yeah. Scott and Betsy DeVos and Ben Carson and all these people taking these hugely important roles and obviously completely, you know, then you got advisors like the princess and the wannabe prince and princess, Ivanka and Jared.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I was going to say, you can't forget them. I was going
to
add it.
The nepotism. Yeah, nepotism. I always want to ask that to Trump people, too. Like, how do you feel about the nepotism? Do you want this to be a monarchy? Or like, what? You're okay with that? You're cool with that? I don't. Anyway.
You know, I'm surprised that, excuse me, he did a bunch of late night pardons last night.
Oh, yeah. Lil Wayne, I think, was one of them.
Lil Wayne was one of them. Yeah, that's cool.
Steve Bannon.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he paid a good price for it. But, you know, that's a different subject. But anyway, I'm surprised that he did not grant pardons to his family.
Yeah.
Can he, though? Wasn't there something saying that that's not...
I don't know. I think you can pardon anybody except for yourself.
Dispute. There was a lot of dispute about him granting one to himself.
Right.
My question I still have not figured out is, what does that even mean, a pardon? Because when you're no longer president and you had a horrible track record as a president and you pardon somebody, can that never be brought up again?
No.
Like, is that that's it forever?
I mean, these guys are so evil. They're so used to being evil that like they're just going to go Stone? Out and do something else evil.
Yeah. Roger Stone is like a villain in a comic book.
Yeah.
You know, that guy.
To bring it up again would be double jeopardy. You know, there.
Did he pardon Giuliani?
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, God.
He didn't pay his bills, though. He didn't pay his legal bills.
That's right. He's not touching the New York lawyers because there's too much there.
Giuliani is just a.
It was an embassy.
Unbelievable. Like well, the cast of characters.
Four seasons, total landscaping. All
well,
there.
You know, it's like I said in an earlier podcast, I'm afraid that if I had Giuliani handle a traffic ticket for me, I'd probably wind up in prison. You know, in fact, he's so stupid
that
even Trump's got it. He is not going to be on the impeachment defense team. I saw that they finally got enough sense.
So now that he's out, I mean, they're still going to proceed with impeachment even though he's out.
Yeah. Like, well, see, there's
conviction can still happen. It's possible according to.
Well, conviction.
Basically, the main thing is they could bar him from ever running from office.
Exactly.
That's, so that yes. so it,
that's
it's already
the
been.
Most important thing.
Oh, right. It's been approved in the House. Now it goes to the Senate. Right. The Senate has to vote on it.
And that's the conviction, right?
I don't think it's a conviction. I think it's just a removal from office. Well, that's what it is.
Oh, no. No, he would be convicted.
Convicted of what?
It is considered a trial.
He would be convicted of the charges that were brought against him in the impeachment. Mm. He would be convicted of inciting to riot. But that takes 2/3 majority in the Senate.
Yeah,
now, if they convict him... And they want to consider barring him from office, then they have to vote again. And that only takes, that would only require a simple majority in the Senate. But the question of, you know, well, this isn't constitutional. Well, the point is that many federal officers, federal position holders have been impeached after they've been out of office. That's happened before. It's not happened with the president, but it's happened. The president isn't the only one that can be impeached. They can impeach Supreme Court justices.
When does the new Senate take effect?
Today they swear in the last, those two from Georgia that hadn't been sworn in yet. They're sworn in, and so now the Senate becomes.
So what that means, they can, even though the impeachment was brought up in the previous administration, the new administration Senate can vote on it.
Oh yeah,
but it has to be 2/3. So that's
has to be 2/3 for a conviction. And I think where Trump's got to be a little bit concerned is that McConnell.
Yeah,
he's all for it now. He's the one that said on the other day that Trump fed, he fired up the crowd and he fed them lies.
Yeah, McConnell's become more outspoken about it.
Yes.
It's a little surprising.
That's because more of this audio is coming out that the FBI is like turning up. And I think it's starting to hit home. It's like, thank God for all the stupid iPhones that people were
right.
using, because it's actually become more evident.
Anything McConnell does, in my mind, is politically driven. There's nothing that he's doing that is for the betterment of the country. Yeah. It's always politically driven. And same thing with Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and those guys. But McConnell's the leader. So. What's up?
But when Schumer replaces him, what's going to happen with McConnell's voice then?
Well, he's the minority leader now.
Yeah.
But so the big difference is that Schumer, being the majority leader, will be able to, for example, set the schedule for when they do the trial. So McConnell would have had it in his power to just delay and delay and
mess around with it. Yeah.
He would also.
Now we'll do it.
Yeah.
We have New York story about Schumer. Okay. Remember when they did the Women's March here? So 2017.
Yeah.
This month.
4 years ago, this Saturday.
This Saturday. Big deal here in New York. It was amazing. And we marched with Schumer. We were actually just by chance within like millions of people, like shoulder to shoulder with him. So I have all these pictures that he was out there, and it was kind of, he kept saying, we're going to get him. We're going to get him. And it was just, it was an amazing New York. It was really one of the most amazing things to experience here. Yeah,
that's really cool.
The streets just opened up and it blew my mind. And we walked all the way through Midtown, and he was right there with us.
You talked to him? Did you get to talk to him a little?
There was like,
sort of like sloganeering.
He was kind of like everywhere. It was just, you know, so much energy, and like people were talk about peaceful. It was amazing. Then, remember, it was an extremely sunny, beautiful day, and it was great, but it blows my mind, like 4 years ago, to think like where we are.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, how much has changed in 4 years. It's really crazy, and especially in the last year with COVID, but even more. I mean, there's just so much change. Our world has changed so much. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, that what happens now. I don't know if anybody can really predict how it's all going to land.
Well, I heard this morning that for his first day in office, Biden is going to issue 15 executive orders.
Overturning everything.
And most, yes, overturning Trump, yes.
I mean, that's good. Start. Yeah.
Well, we're going to go back with the Paris Environment Accord, Paris Accords.
Yeah. He's going to... Position,
yes, exactly. Yeah, so hopefully he can. I'm hoping he can undo a lot of damage in a short amount of time. Now, granted, there's been so much damage done, I'm not sure in 4 years he's going to be able to undo all of it.
Yeah, you know? One thing that he touts is that he started no new wars.
This is true.
It is true.
I was thinking about that maybe because everybody else in the world thinks he's insane. And like, you know, I wouldn't want to mess with that guy. Like, they're like, whoa, these guys, you know, he's nuts. It's like, he's absolutely like crazy. I don't want to mess with the United States right now. So that might have been his why nothing happened, but it was kind of quiet, you know. And I don't know well, much about that, but
I think he's too damn lazy to start a
war. This is true.
It would have to serve him in some way.
So much work. You have to pay attention.
And then, you know, his time in Twitter feed would be.
Well, I thought for a second there it was going to be it was going to be Iran. I thought he was going to, because Pompeo came out and said Al Qaeda is now in Iran, and I thought like they was going to start a war like yesterday or something, just so they could, you know.
We were all thinking, you know, like, but they still, I'm on edge, you know. We can't.
I know.
Knock on wood.
Pompeo's got his head so far up Trump's ass, it's not even funny. He's still a diehard Trumper, you know.
Yeah, there's some weird payoff thing there. I don't know.
It's got to be.
Weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all weird.
Everybody has their own particular personal agenda for what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes down to individuals. You think of it as a group, but it's an individual trying to profit off of something or livelihood or fame or power. It's an individual decision to go and do this stuff. Each person does it, but then you get the mob mentality too, like, which is, you know, takes on a life of its own. But anywho, well,
yeah. Well,
we've covered a lot of ground, I'd say. Solved all the world's problems, I'd say.
And everything.
It's important that you really get this session out into the world. You know, since we solved all the problems, people need
to really need to the blanket. The
it won't really do anybody any good.
I don't know. I think it's really good to talk about this right now because it's, you know, we've been isolated here just like a lot of people. It's things are our local bar has been closed for 12 months.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, it's insane.
A lot of home drinking.
Yeah. So I like the conversation and a lot of people and our families, you can't talk about it. You guys, you know. And so I like it. I think everyone should talk about it.
Yeah. And that's
our issues. And,
right. I like, the different, you know, different perspectives. I think it was very agreeable conversation with us today because we're all kind of on the same page. And those are fun to have, but I do think it is good to have, people with opposite, not opposite, not too far, but like, you know, just, different opinions, but yeah, I appreciate you guys, doing this. That was fun.
Great to see you.
Yeah. Great to see you too.
That was good to meet you. And we'll look forward to talking to you again, I'm sure, in the future.
Yeah, right, guys. We should.
Anything else you want to you want to talk about before we go? Is there anything else you have any
after that.
New York any other commentary about New York or?
And just remember, this is going to hit the podcast community unedited. I mean, this is what you hear is what you get.
The story of our lives here as artists.
All right, guys.
We're in a place with at least the art world here is stopped essentially. Mm-hmm. And for me, I mean, radio silence everywhere. The whole reason I came here, the whole reason we came here was to have that kind of cultural energy and be involved in those things, and our jobs involve that. And I just keep thinking it's because we've been here so long that we're able to kind of deal with this now. So we're watching a lot of people, artists, friends and stuff, our neighbor in the studio, longtime artist here, he had to move out. You know, he couldn't.
That's what I was gonna ask you. A lot of people leaving.
Yeah, shows are canceled. I had a whole contract which was supposed to happen at Indiana University. I was extremely excited, my alma mater, and coming back to Bloomington, and I had planned it for a year. I was going to work with a geologist in the limestone quarries. It was great. And it was done, canceled. And these things don't come back for artists. That's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like a lot of other fields where I've been getting people, oh, it's okay. It'll be okay. It'll all, you'll get back. My experience is not always true. You know, so that's something here I think we're seeing for the first time. Mm-hmm. A city that is so built on that. And that's, at least for the New York side, it's really hard to see that.
You know, I graduated from our alma mater 3 times. I've got a BS, an MS, and a DDS from Indiana University.
Cool.
So I am a tried and true. And so you went to School of Art there?
Yeah, we both did the BFA program. He was in painting and I was in printmaking.
Cool.
And but it's a fine arts department there, and many moons ago now. But, you know, and we have friends still there, and music friends, in fact, with the music school, things like that. And so, but we haven't gone back. I haven't had an opportunity to go back. So it's, but it's definitely a place of great time and memory for both of us.
Cool town.
Yeah.
Cool town.
Bloomington is like an oasis in the middle of Redneckville.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
It's kind of how I've had to explain it living in New York for all these years. I'm at Indiana University. It's how it
no, fits. No, it's really cool. It's a great town. You'd love it.
You know. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's about what I would expect to hear. You know, cities just kind of, you know, losing people and in your line of work. Yeah. Is there any way to do your line of work online or anything like that? Or is it just kind of not really?
I mean, Nick, you could talk more about, I mean, with photography, which is your work, is a your work for hire, but that's,
I mean, I make a living as a photographer. And so that's been okay. It slowed down, but it didn't disappear. And a big reason for that is because people spend more time than ever on screens, yeah, and they need pictures of things. So when I do most of my photography within the art world, so I take pictures of other people's things, and somebody does a project and nobody can come see it, they surely want good pictures to put on Instagram or wherever.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I've been able to continue working, but that's just, you know, that's my 9-to-5 thing.
Right. Well, hopefully this vaccines actually work and we can sort of get back to some level of normalcy. No, another podcast, but yeah, my wife is a surgeon and she got the first round. She's getting the second round today.
Did she? I was wondering.
If my dad got it down in Bloomington. He lives in Bloomington. And
my dad got it too.
Oh, good. Good.
Because of Vietnam vets. So he had to drive to get it, but yeah, so.
Great. Yeah. You know, it's a ever evolving issue. Yeah, hopefully we can get back to some level of normalcy in the near future, but until then, we just got to keep doing whatever the hell we're doing to survive. Yeah. Well, again, it's been a pleasure. And
yes.
I hope to do this again with you guys someday. I'm trying to just, like, you know, have different people on occasionally, and, you know, we can have a particular topic to discuss next time. And this was a good overall general problem solving session. So.
About a historical day too. So
special day. Special day. We actually got to hear a little bit of the man speak too, so it was good.
Be sure to check us out. You know, the Tom and the John and Tom show.
Yes,
we're on, the John and Tom show. You can catch us on Spotify.
We're on Apple and Spotify and
Buzzsprout.
Yeah, Buzzsprout's where it's hosted, and then it gets sent from there. It goes to Apple and Spotify. So,
how many have you guys done?
This is episode 9.
Okay,
and they're all long form, so they're meant for, you know, in depth discussions. You know, it's not a quick hit. It's like a, you know, if you're working out for an hour, put it on and listen. It's part informative. You know, we try to come with facts as much as possible. We have shows, you know, with, you know, themes sometimes. Like, we're actually trying to provide information of something that's really important at that day. And it's kind of timely. It's current events, things like that. So we, you know, so it's part information, part just, you know, conversational. And when you do a free form conversation, sometimes it goes in places you didn't expect, and we just kind of do that and try to make it kind of fun. And Tom's the man. So,
well, we don't have any real ground rules, John. We just kind of, you know, the show goes where it goes, and I think that's great, because we hit on a lot of different things. And in our next episode, hopefully we're going to be talking to folks across the pond, get their perspective on the U.S., how they look at us, and especially how they've looked at all this garbage that's gone on in the last couple of weeks or so.
I hope that
should be really interesting.
I hope that it just becomes boring, and then we're going to have to come up with a whole new topic for our show.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Really it's been focused on, you know, Trumpism and all this crazy election stuff. That's kind of what motivated us to do this. And hopefully that whole, you know, if everything just settles down, we can talk about other stuff.
It might bring in different conversations. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that in the sense of learning from all of it too. Hopefully we all can, kind of.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks again. And you guys have a good day. It's a pleasure. Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, guys. Yep.
Again, it's great meeting you all. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Happy Inauguration Day.
You guys too. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right. So we're still on. We can stay on for a little bit. Or why don't we take a little break? We could come back for maybe like a little, summary.
Yeah.
Conclusion. Talk about the inauguration a little bit. And we'll be back in a bit. Hey there, this is John from the John and Tom Show. If you are interested in starting your own podcast, contact us today at carmelsoundlab@gmail.com. Yeah, so we're back. We're back. And I'm going to play a special treat. I'm just going to play a little bit of it because it's, it has to do with the disappearance of the honeybees. It's called Bees. And it's in 5/4. Very strange. And something I made a while back.
You know, when I play fiddle, everything's usually in either 4/4 or 3/4 cut time. Mm. Like jigs and all that are in cut time.
I've never made another 5/4 song. This is the only one ever.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, don't they know we really need them? But so apparently they've kind of come back. This was an issue like 15 years ago where bees start disappearing.
Yeah, I think they finally decided it was a disease, a fungus or
I don't know something what I don't know what they was killing them. Yeah.
But you know, the Native Americans refer to bees as the white man's flies because they're not endemic to North America. They were brought here from Europe. Yeah,
I didn't know that. You always have a special tidbit.
Yeah,
I like that. So that last segment was with Joy and Nick in out of New York City, artists. It was a pleasure. Talking to them. You know, you could see, we do Zoom calls with people. So that's what you're hearing when you hear the guests for the most part, unless they come in person. And you can kind of just see it on their faces a little bit that it's this COVID lockdown stuff is getting to everybody, especially when you're an artist. And it's already hard. It's already hard to do what they do. And then you throw COVID in there. And in New York City, people are leaving, like probably a lot of their friends left and people that are in the artist community. It's just such a difficult time, you know? I feel for them a little bit, you know, they seem to be, you know, they're great people and they're, successful in their, what they do. And they'll be fine, but it's just a tough time. You know, you think about all the different people that have been affected. Everyone's been affected by COVID.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the lockdowns in particular are especially challenging for certain people and certain businesses. So we got a little flavor of their experience there. And, we got to hear a little bit of Biden's inauguration speech.
Yeah.
Which, we'll see how long he lasts and president. But, as we said, I think we're okay if Kamala takes over, whenever. We don't want to be too harsh on him. I don't want to be too harsh on him. I feel like sometimes I am. Politics are supposed to be kind of boring. And if he's doing the right thing and making the right policies and taking the right actions, then it's all that matters. You know, he could be a good president.
Well, I think, excuse me, one of the things that I like about Joe Biden, personally, is that he's a low-key, humble guy.
Yes,
he's
humble.
He's not arrogant. He's not. He's not highfalutin or whatever. He's just he's like just average Joe. That's the way I like to look at him.
Yeah, good point. Average Joe, and he is a blue collar kind of guy. It just speaks from the heart. Sometimes a shoe goes in his mouth when he talks because he kind of has done that his whole career, though. It's not even because he's old. Like, he's always been kind of the guy you're waiting for him to say something kind of, you know, silly, but his heart is on his sleeve. I believe him.
Yes. I
believe that he's got a good heart and he means well, and he's blue collar guy. And you see some of these conspiracy theories calling him a pedophile, calling him
communist,
criminal, crime family, the Biden criminal family.
Yes. You know,
like crime family. These crazy accusations.
Antichrist.
The Antichrist is always a good one, but it's really you're really reaching for some craziness there. I mean, all of those things are. It's like, what can they say to get a reaction? I don't know. Maybe those people are just looking for clicks or internet traffic or something. I don't know. Maybe they're bots. Maybe they're Russian bots. Who knows? But I think, you know, he just seems. You know, he was vice president for 8 years, and he loved being Obama's vice president. I think he really respected Obama, because I think Obama, you know, he also the Antichrist, but maybe that's what they got along so well.
They were both
Antichrists.
Yeah, they were competing for number one Antichrist, and Obama won.
Now Obama is number one, but I don't know. You know, maybe Biden will get two terms and be like 90 years old and president. Who knows?
Well, to me, he's not that old, John.
Well, it's not how old his number. It's how he seems.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? It's not his age.
Physically, he doesn't look that good.
It's like physically, and he never had slurred like that before. It's not a speech impediment. He's old, and he's kind of losing it a little bit. And he's trying so hard, and he wants to do a good job. I know he does. But I think he's getting a little...
Yeah, he's getting a little
something's
out
happening there.
Yeah.
And it's not about his number, his age number. It's some people, it just hits them at any age, you know. And it just seems to be that might be happening. But, you know, again, it's most important thing is what his actions, you know. And it's not like a reality TV show. We're not holding rallies for some weird reason. Why would the only president in history to hold rallies, like during his presidency, why would you hold rallies?
You know, this is a good point, John. I never thought about that.
That's part of the dictator playbook.
Yeah, he did hold rallies. And I'm looking back over all the presidents that I remember from Kennedy on, and he's the only one.
Well, when you're in office, why do you need to hold rallies?
Yeah, why do you need to hold rallies? I mean, one thing that always, this is just on a personal basis, this is me talking here, folks. Mm-hmm. But I always had a feeling that Trump had a hidden agenda.
Yeah.
There was something else going on with him than what you saw was not what you got. But with Joe Biden, I don't see that. Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, he wears it on his sleeve. I think what you see is what you
get.
He's
kind of a simple man.
Yes, he is.
There's nothing complicated about Joe Biden. They kind of want to call it both ways. He's a mastermind of conspiracies. He's a criminal mind, but he's also senile. You can't have it both ways. You can't be both of those things.
This is true. Well, you know, it's like... we were talking back a few episodes ago, and I know I'm, this may be repetitive. However, we were talking about whether Trump really is a millionaire. And I saw an article yesterday that says, no, he's not a millionaire. He's anything but a millionaire. But that was the facade that he has put forth and he continues to put forth. And it will be interesting now that he's out of office, when these creditors start coming after him for all the money he owes and the legal problems that he's facing in New York and possibly from the Department of Justice. Who knows? I think we're going to find out the true Donald Trump. I don't think we know the real Donald Trump yet, but I think we're about to find out.
Yeah, that's a good point. I looked up something real quick. In 2017, he had 10 political rallies. In 2017, the year that he was inaugurated, he had 10 rallies.
After he'd been elected.
Just after he'd been elected.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
2018, 40 rallies. 40 rallies in 2018. I don't have any more data than that right now, but 40.
Well, hell, that makes 50 in 2 years.
Yeah, that's just the first 2 years after winning the election. He had 50 rallies. Like, what are those rallies for? It's to build fervor, to increase divisiveness. It's like a World Wrestling Federation show. It's reality TV. It's wild. That is something that dictators do. They hold rallies.
Oh yeah, because
that's on the list.
Yeah, because they eat up recognition.
Praise.
You praise, exactly. You know,
he thrives. That's what he lives on is praise and adoration.
Well, let's look at Joe Stalin, Chairman Mao, Kim, Fidel Castro, Hitler. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing. There really is no reason to hold rallies otherwise.
No,
and no president, as far as I know, has ever done that during a presidency. Why would you hold a rally?
Yeah, exactly. What purpose does it serve? You know, the guy's in office. Okay, fine. I mean, I can see during elections, sure, everybody holds rallies, pre-election and all that. But after he's in office, what purpose does this serve?
Yeah, I think I would like somebody to comment on that. I don't think it does serve a purpose other than just
feeds his ego,
feeding his base, getting them excited, and he's, you know, a lot of the things he was saying there were very divisive, a lot of lies, a lot of divisiveness, blaming people, talking about the evil media. You know, he gets to talk directly to them. I think that was the biggest appeal to him. He understood the importance of no filter, and that's why he did the Twitter thing, and that's why he did the rallies. Is the emotional bond, of a cult leader,
good point,
is in person and direct. There's no filter. There's nobody reading his scripts or his speeches and correcting him. It's him, and I think people loved that, and they appreciated that. And
it's like, I'm one of you. Yeah, you know, we're all one here. Well, you know, point you made earlier today is that he now has the Patriot Party. And I really, in retrospect, I really think he's been looking at forming his own party from the get-go. I don't think this just happened overnight. I think this has been in the making for years.
Well, I mean, I agree with that. I think there's many interviews with him in the 90s and 2000s that he even said, like, the only reason I would probably pick the Republican Party because they're so dumb. And that was not me saying that I could get away with it. He didn't care about the party. It's not about like his values and views and what he stands for is not Republican or Democrat. It's his own, and it's his own goals. And I think that you're seeing that he's probably achieved everything he set out for. He set out to get people to praise him, and 75 million American citizens voted for him.
Yes.
After 4 years of chaotic,
abuse of power,
hateful abuse, and they more people voted for him in 2020 than in 2016.
Yeah,
by like 5 million. You know, he got like 5 million additional votes.
Well,
overall,
fortunately, Biden got 7 million more than that. So, I really think he decided, because you're right, he didn't know which party he was going to swing with. And I really think that had he gone with the Democrats, he would have destroyed the Democrat yeah. Party just as much as he has destroyed the Republican Party.
But yeah, his goal was to get a large base.
Yes, and personal base.
Personal base that only follows him, and he achieved that.
Yes, he did.
Regardless of whether he's still in power, he achieved getting people to fall under his spell, and they're still under his spell, and they will still do to this day on the inauguration day of 2021. They will still do whatever he says, and maybe it's gone down to 60 million since January 6th, or you know, maybe he lost some of his people, but that's still a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And they're brainwashed completely. And we're going to see in the next coming months how that plays out. Will he have his own media company? Probably.
Yes. Now that he's got his own party, sure.
Because then he can completely control the narrative. Whereas somebody else, even Newsmax and OAN and all those other places are, they're not completely loyal to him right now. They are, but he wants to control the narrative completely. And so he'll probably start his own Trump News Network, TNN. And like, I think there's another TNN, but he'll do that. And then he'll keep
TPN, Trump Patriotic Network.
PNN. Patriot News Network.
There you go. PNN. Right.
PNN.
Perfect.
Yeah. So he's going to continue to that, you know, project that narrative and project the information that, you know, he wants to control people's minds, and they'll probably do it. And they'll just be like, you know, we're going to win in 2024 and we can be patient. Maybe they won't even pay our taxes or something. I don't know. Maybe they're not going to abide by the rules. Some of the more crazy extremists will do bad things.
Oh, yeah.
Skirmishes and whatnot. It's not going to be a civil war. It's, as I said in previous podcasts, I don't even know what that means. but I do still have this like deep-seated fear of military and police turning on the government at some point and trying to, you know, having some sort of internal coup where it splits. It splits.
You know? Well, every coup has to have, it starts with the military. Yeah. I mean, if you look at every one of them,
we got a big one.
Yeah, and we got the biggest military in the world. But you know, maybe I'm being optimistic here, John, but I have enough faith in our people in the armed forces that won't happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think you said that before, and I agree with that.
I mean, I have nothing but respect for our men and women in uniform. And I really think that it would be a cold day in hell before that would ever happen. But you know, this sounds, what Trump is doing sounds an awful lot, and I'm going to say it, sounds like the old USSR to me, where you've got a dictator, one party, a dictator, and then you have news like Pravda and Izvestia that only parrots what the government tells them to. There is no free press,
right?
And I think that's really what he's attempting to do.
He's been on that playbook from day one.
Absolutely.
And even Scott is under the impression that he was never given a fair chance. He really believes that. Scott Fisk, he believes that, that he was never given a fair chance. Of course, that's the way he set it up. He set it up to be the victim. Mm-hmm. You know, from day one, he was the victim.
Always. He's always the victim.
But reporters are, their job is to ask tough questions. Their job is to vet things.
Yes.
And you should be man enough to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. He didn't pose it in that way. He looked at it as like fake news. It's all fake news. Mm-hmm. So therein began the journey towards alternate reality. And over 4 years, 4 years of continuing that long, awful march.
Oh, God.
Here we are. And there's 60 million people in this country, at least, who are completely brainwashed to think that, you know, all the things that they believe. And it's shocking, you know, that still now. And I don't want to, it's all speculation right now too. Cause so we have a new government as of today. What does that mean? Well, it could mean a lot, you know, it could mean a lot. And, but the question I think for us is, what do we see happening with the 60 million people who who still think the election was stolen, and all their news sources are telling them that this is an illegal government, and all the far right extremists are still even more fired up than they were before January 6th. I don't know. Maybe you'll start weeding out some of the lawyers and the mayoral candidates who went to the, like, they're like, holy shit, I didn't think it was going to be that.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was going to go to jail.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. So maybe some of those people might be weeded out, but the extremists, I think, are more excited now because they got some action. They made a real dent in things, you know, and they got to poop on the Capitol.
Yeah, exactly.
They stole Pelosi's laptop.
Gonna turn it over to the Russians.
They came close to possibly murdering some government officials, in addition to the police officer that was killed. But yeah, scary times.
Yeah, I still what bothers me is and this isn't anything new. This is that the fact that you've got extremists elected officials. This isn't the first time it's happened. I mean, this.
Yeah, that's true.
But it just seems more prominent now since we had, you know, the attack on the Capitol and all that. Of course, I remember going back to the Joe McCarthy days. You know, he was crazy, and he wasn't alone. The reason he got away with a lot of the stuff that he did for so long is because he wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
You know, he had cohorts, you know, of elected officials that went along with it. And look how crazy that was.
Yeah. that's a big part of it. Enablers.
Exactly. Yes.
Enablers.
Yes, enablers. Like Ted Cruz, and Josh Hawley, and Marjorie Greene, and Lauren Boebert. You know, this, but again, they're not a unique club. This has happened before, and before we've been able to overcome it, and I think we will this time too. I think they'll cut their own throats. It'll be interesting to see what happens in 2022 from a lot of perspectives. Number one, how well the Republicans come out of it, and secondly, if the Patriot Party under Trump comes to fruition, if they don't become a force in the 2022 elections, the next 2 years, what happens in the next 2 years? Well, next year, I guess this is 2021, but what happens in the off year elections is going to be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing they're pointing to right away is they got to start focusing on 2022 to get they want to get the Senate back. But if you start getting a new party, how does that even work?
Ugh.
Like if you have Patriot Party people in there, if that becomes a thing for real, but they'll probably vote, I guess. I don't know. I can't even imagine what that's going to look like. But
well, you know, as I step back and look at it, John, I see the Patriot Party as the Republican Party's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Because this is going to take a hell of a lot of votes away from Republicans.
Yeah.
Come 2022, if there is indeed a patriotic party, per se, the third party, they're going to take a lot of votes away from the Republicans. The Republicans have to be really worried about the possibility of a Trump third party.
If that happens, it almost guarantees that the Democrats stay in power.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I'd say. Too much. Let's see, this is an old song, too. Oh, yeah. old song. Just needed a little break. This is an old one. It's a little sloppy. That's okay.
Okay. I don't know. Sounds pretty good to
like
me,
that?
Man.
Okay. You
know,
you like everything, though.
You know, John, well, John, you are your own worst critic. You see, I am listening to this for the first time. I've never heard it before. I mean, all this stuff you played is new to me.
It's just a little instrumental. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of little experimental things.
Love instrumentals.
Yeah. Well, we were just going to come back after that session with our friends Joy and Nick and just kind of touch on a few things. I think we've done that. We could continue, but I think we're going to hold off. And is there anything else you want to talk about, Tom, today while we're at it? This is inauguration day. So
have we
gone there enough?
The only thing I can say is that I hope that Joe Biden has the strength to handle the mess that he's stepping into. I mean, I feel bad for the guy because he's just got one hell of a mess to deal with right off the bat. I'm, you know, from
know
day
what?
One.
Yeah. And is he capable of it? I, you know, it reminds me of when Obama took over in 2008. What a tremendous mess our country was in
my
at that
God,
time.
Yeah.
The economy was just absolute in the crapper. I mean, we were in bad
shape. We had horrible recessions. And
yeah, the mortgage crisis that just happened and we were, you know, in two wars and everything had gone sideways and it was just real big disaster. And, but I mean, he did everything he could, I you know, and he's a younger guy and he's a very smart guy and, you know, he was inexperienced, but you know, I think he did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
Biden, this is a different set of issues. And it's, I think a lot, I don't know how, if they're, it's probably worse, I'd say. I would say the world is in a different place now than it was 12 years ago. And I think it's a lot more difficult because it's the heart of our whole nation we're talking about, not just economy or wars. This is like our democracy is in jeopardy, our whole identity. And he's 78 years old and he just doesn't have the same amount of energy or, you know, that somebody like, you know, Obama had way back when,
sure.
You know? So yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I think somebody like Kamala is probably more, you know, qualified to do it. But at the same time, you know, Biden can just be the figurehead too. He doesn't have to be, you know, like,
well, the president basically is.
Yeah, it's a figurehead. It's supposed to be a figurehead.
Yeah,
it's not,
exactly.
It's not supposed to be the dear leader. You know?
No.
Like, he makes all decisions.
No,
he solves all the problems. He makes all the decisions.
Yeah,
only he can fix the problems.
Yeah,
you know?
He's not the Fuhrer.
God, he's... Yeah,
you know, I know everybody's really... And you're not the only one. A lot of people, and to me, some extent, I mean, he's not that much older than me. But anyway, his age, I know a lot of people are concerned about that. However, when you look at it this way, he brings to the office a lot of experience and wisdom.
Absolutely.
You know, and I hope he can, and I really, really, truly hope that he uses that to the best advantage for the country. Not for, I don't think he's doing this for Joe Biden.
No.
He's doing this for the country.
I don't think he wanted to be president.
I don't think he did either.
I you know, he had a lot of issues in his life, some family struggles. You know, I think one of his sons died. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, his son died. Well, and of course, his wife was killed in an automobile accident.
I mean,
he's had a lot of really difficult things.
And, you know, I really don't think, I think he wanted to just lay low, but he was called to do this. And, you know, it's his duty. That's what he thinks of as his duty. And think about his career, 47 years in public office as a senator.
Mm-hmm.
That's dedication, man. I mean, I don't, you know, people say he didn't do anything in 47 years. Like, he was a senator for 47 years. That's something.
Well, evidently, I mean, the people of Delaware liked him all right, or they wouldn't have kept reelecting him all those years.
Yeah, he did something right. And he just got a good heart, you know. And that's what he's like, a grandpa, you know, a good grandpa.
Yeah, he is.
You know, maybe that's just kind of how we can come together a little bit, maybe as a country, and just say, like, you know, let's just calm down, everybody. You know, all the stuff that you guys are all riled up about doesn't even really exist.
No,
you know, it's bullshit. Nobody's coming to take your guns. You know, all we want is some background checks. And maybe some background checks, and maybe some tests of, you know, cognitive ability, but or something basic. Let's get back into some positive climate change ideas, you know, and get with the rest of the world. Let's be respected again in this world, in this, you know, entire world again, and not act like we're trying to become a fascist dictatorship, where we're just intimidating everybody and becoming isolationists. Why would we do that? What's the point? Where all the economy and everything is intertwined globally. It's impossible to detach from that. Yeah. Why would we want to try to, you know, what's the point? Like, let's be smart. Let's create new jobs based on the new world, the new economy. The half the jobs that have gone away are because of tech, because of advancements in tech, not because of anything else. No, let's get smart about what are the new jobs that people are going to be able to do. You know, some of these manufacturing jobs are just gone. I mean, some of these jobs in general are just gone. They've been taken over by tech, and it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. That's another question in itself too. You know, how is technology getting people to lose their jobs? And those jobs disappear forever.
Well, you know, technology is the good news, bad news.
Right.
It has created jobs and it's killed jobs. And I remember when I graduated high school, you could go, a lot of guys did this because we lived in Indianapolis on the west side. It was a GM town. We had Allison's. And a lot of these guys would go to work. They'd start out pushing a broom and getting paid at that time, like in the late 60s, getting paid $15 an hour and all kinds of benefits for pushing a broom. Mm. And then they could retire in 20 years and, you know, still be not even 40 years old. And so but the guys that came after them had to carry them mm-hmm. and so on. And, mm-hmm. and sooner or later, it all stopped. GM went bankrupt. Chrysler went bankrupt. Ford didn't, because Ford had really good management, very good management. But the point is, the old days of going out there with no skills, no further abilities, and expecting to make a good living are long gone. I mean, I knew that 50 years ago that wasn't going to last, and it didn't.
Well, yeah. So some of the bigger picture things in that is like, what are people going to do in the future as jobs, you know, change? And, you know, then you start looking at, you know, I know this is a very debated topic, but universal basic income is something that people talk about. That is a book called Player Piano by Kurt Vonnegut. One of his first books.
You know, I never read it. I read a lot of Breakfast of Champions, Slaughterhouse-Five, and all that. I never read that.
I'm a big fan of him, and I came onto him later. I know a lot of people read him in high school and college because it's kind of young. That's not satire, is it? I don't know. But he's a funny guy, but he's also kind of a fatalist in some ways. But
yeah,
well, he was in, you know, that Dresden situation with the World War II, but
yeah, he was taking POW, so my point, probably did something to his head, you know.
Well, the bombing, I think it was all the bombing.
Oh yeah.
But my point was that Player Piano is one of his first books. It's about a society that is all automated. Nobody has jobs. They just go to the bar. It's one side of the river, and it's all machines and factories, but they're all automated, and there's only about 5 managers that have jobs, and
everybody else oversee the machines.
Yeah, they oversee the machines, and that's it. And then everybody else is over here. The humans are on this side of the river, and they just go to the bar and drink all day. And it's like, that's it. I didn't finish the book, but I got about halfway through. But it's just that idea of down the road, like, that's where we're headed in some ways. Like, it, everything's taken care of by machines. Tech does everything. Well, yeah, and, like, what do you do in that case? Is that really where we're headed? And so, like, Andrew Yang is talking about universal basic income now. And I don't know. It's just, it's too big of a topic. He ran on that as his main platform in 2020 as a candidate. And now he's running for the mayor of New York.
Yes. I was just going to say he brought the, I heard that. That was brought up again because now he's running for mayor of New York about the concept of universal basic income,
right.
and so it's not died at all.
There's a lot of explaining to do. I think we're kind of far away from it. I'm not a proponent of it right now, and I don't think it's going to be it'll be a long time before that is a real possibility. But some people, like in Stockton, California, the mayor of Stockton started doing universal basic income. Everybody gets $500 a month.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was like a couple years ago.
Wow.
It's like the mayor is like 32 years old. Stockton's kind of a little bit of a rundown place. But I don't know the results of that. I don't know after 2 years of doing it, I don't know where they're at on it, but, I still think it's kind of far away as a reality. I don't know. There's too many things. But you do think about the amount. So just think about the trillions and trillions of dollars that were printed this past year for COVID relief. And, you know, some of the other, like the fiscal budget and all the stuff, the aid we send overseas and all these different things that we just print money and send it. You know, you could pay people $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month or something, every single citizen, and just be about the same amount of money. But then you're like, then you got to sit back and go, okay. But so Andrew Yang actually has a way of paying for that. Like there's ways for paying for that. Every person gets, you know, universal basic income, and there are ways to do it. I have a friend who is pretty knowledgeable about it. I was considering having him come on to talk about it.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah. He knows a lot more than I do. He's not an expert, but he's close.
The concept is new to me. I mean, I've heard about it, but
it's kind of future society stuff.
Exactly. But I've not really got into in depth about it, what all the economic impacts of it would be. But in a way, because of the pandemic, we are in universal.
We've been doing that a little bit.
We've been doing that a little bit. Yeah. Because of all the unemployment and we're doing these stimulus packages and all that. So we're already there a little bit.
The money gets put right back into the economy. Those people that need that money, they're paying rent, they're buying clothes, they're buying food, they're keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
It's not like
they're not sitting on it.
They're not sitting on it. They're not saving it. That is money that's being used back into the economy. So it's an interesting theory. I don't know enough about it to speak about it intelligently. And
I had
a long conversation with my friend about it, and he seemed to know a lot more. So maybe I'll have him on. I've already asked him, so maybe he'll join us one of these days.
Oh, sure he will.
Matt, if you're listening, you gotta get on this.
Everybody wants to be on our show, John.
Yeah. Anybody that knows anything about anything, wants to be on the show, email us at thejohnandtomshow@gmail.com. We would like to hear from you. If you made it this far into this podcast, thank you. It's been a long one. We're trying to get back into more guests and different perspectives. I think we may be able to get back into the common ground idea soon. Once things calm down. Which I'd like to do.
Well, we're going to try to veer away from politics and talk to interesting people that do interesting things. You know, it's not just this show has been a lot about politics because given the times, that's what's on everybody's mind. But hopefully after the dust settles, and I hope it does settle, that we can get into a little bit more of a wider
Yeah.
Wider
all kinds
view.
Of stuff.
Yeah. And get away from the downer stuff, and maybe, you know, get people like Nick and Joy that were in here, they're artists in New York. Well, it was interesting to hear them tell us what's going on in New York. That's a part of the country I went to many, many years ago as a child, but there and out, but I don't really know that much about New York. But it was interesting to hear their perspective.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up. I think we'll have to, we're going to have another episode pretty soon. I think we're going to have your German friend on.
Yeah,
for our discussion with the European perspective, and especially Germany, since some of the things we've been talking about have been related to some of the German history, yep. And how that is, and what's going on over there. I'm curious because I think, and I feel like in the world there's been a little bit of a resurgence of right wing,
yes,
like borderline fascist people, like the leader of Brazil and some of these other people around, and some of the extremist groups are starting to grow in popularity a little bit. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, the Europeans have their extremists just like we do.
Yep.
You know, so it'll be interesting.
Oh, I was even talking to my Indian friend, Raman, mm-hmm. who I think I recorded one last night with him. I might release it as a supplemental episode about India politics, mm-hmm. India. And he said there's this group called the RSS, which is like the KKK of India.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they're open and outward about it.
You mean to tell me they're as crazy as we are?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's interesting. You don't think of some of the similarities of India, yeah. You know, but coming, you know, Raman has lived here, for a long time in Indianapolis. He lived in Australia after for college and got his master's in Australia. And then he came to New York for a little bit and then came to Indiana. He loves it here. But it's interesting to hear his perspective. He's a Sikh. And he is, you know, he knows a lot about India politics. And so if you get a chance, I think I'm going to publish that short. It was only about an hour, so that's short for us.
But, oh, I'd love to hear it. Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
And check it out. We may do more with him. I think there's a lot that we could learn from him about India, a major, major, major country in this world, 1.3 billion or something, 1.4 billion
Oh, it's people. Incredible.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.